Blog Talk Radio.
Going into the corner, Gordie Howe goes in to fight for it. He and Zygenkov have it. Back to Walt, not in front. Here's Bobby Hull, shoots, scores! Bobby Hull!
Junot trying to make a play. Lemieux steals, and he's up against Raymond Bork and Adam Oates. Coming to the Bruins, they got around both men, cutting for the net. He's in on goal. Hey! Charlton scores! What a goal!
Brune carries in, rolling in front of them, and in a shot! Desjardins following the play, and he misses the short shot. Here he is again. Scores! Desjardins!
All right, hockey fans, you're listening to the hard-checking, kick-saving, sudden-death scoring NHL Breakdown. I'm your host, Scott Levy, joined as always by George Kurtz of RotoExpress.com, where we're bringing you all the on- and off-ice action, as well as keeping you fans and you fantasy owners fully informed at the top of your respective leagues. Once the regular season starts, we're going to kick back in with our fantasy reports, a feature that we have every single show, every Monday, every Friday, but it's certainly useful not just for fantasy owners, but for hockey owners as well. We do an injury report, goalie report, waiver wire recommendations, and line combination updates as well. So certainly a good keep on hockey information as we go. We are in the middle of September, our fantasy hockey prep bonanza month, as I like to kind of kookily call it. But we are starting off with position-by-position fantasy rankings, top 25s for all the positions, except for center, where we did a top 40. I'll give you a little bit of a rundown update on that schedule at the end of the show, as well as some other things that we've done recently and plans. I don't want to waste too much time because these ranking shows do go a little bit long, so I do want to jump right into things. But, George, before we jump into the right-wing rankings, we have done goalies, centers, and left wings already. But there were some significant moves that happened recently in the last 36 hours, as well as updated news that happened in the last 15 minutes to a half an hour, and that is the Pacioretty trade from the Montreal Canadiens to the Vegas Golden Knights. Pacioretty going to the Knights for Tatar, Suzuki. Suzuki, that was their 13th pick overall. I think it was their second or third pick in the first round a couple of years ago, as you may remember, and a second-round pick in the 2019 draft. So, George, I'm curious what you just think of the trade, for both teams. Like, you know, does it seem like it'll be nice and fit in well for both these teams? But the updated news on top of that is also that Pacioretty just signed a 4-year, $7 million per year offer with the Vegas Golden Knights. That information also came with a little bit of tidbit that L.A., when he was quote-unquote almost traded there at the draft, they offered 6 years at $6 million, and Pacioretty said no. But, George, I guess, I want to know what you think about the trade overall. But, B, we just talked about left wings on Friday's show, and we had Pacioretty coming in as the 18th ranked left wing. Part of that was because he was with Montreal, not expected to be a very good team, and he obviously had a pretty down year last year. So I'm kind of curious, does this rocket Pacioretty up the fantasy rankings in your opinion? I mean, I got to imagine it's got to give him at least a little bump, a couple of spots. But are we talking one or two spots in your mind, or are we saying, hey, maybe he's top 10 again? So George, and fantasy ranking thoughts for Pacioretty. What do you think?
Yeah, it was nice of this trade to come down after the NFL games ended last night. Yeah, I'm just checking the feed right before I go pretty much call it a night around 12:31 a.m. I see, hey, Montreal and Las Vegas made a trade. It's very nice of them to wait till after that Bears-Green Bay-Packers game finished. The trade makes sense for both squads. I mean, Pacioretty, we knew he wanted out of Montreal. They seemed to want to move away from him as well. It seems like nobody's happy in Montreal. And Tatar, who the Vegas Golden Knights acquired at last year's trade deadline, that didn't really work out. So they moved on from there pretty quickly. Things don't always mesh. That's why, what's the old saying? Grass isn't always greener on the other side. Does it rocket Pacioretty up? No, of course not. Does it move up a couple slots? Sure. But it really doesn't really change him all that much. Maybe he goes from, the bottom of a tier to the top of a tier, that being said. I have a number 19 in my rankings. You said overall we had him at 18, so that's still about right. But as far as guys who are ahead of him, who am I moving him ahead of? Skinner, I kind of like him with Buffalo, Eichel. Keller, you know, only main threat there. Kachuk, I could see him going ahead of Kachuk. I could, you know, so you want to swap them around. But then you're going to get guys like, what, Van Riemsdyk, Marqueso, Raquel, Kovalchuk. I mean, you can make some arguments here. You could. You know, Raquel maybe doesn't do it again. Kovalchuk, he hasn't played in the NHL in a few years. Maybe he's not up to that kind of pounding anymore. But I don't think it significantly changes his ranking all that much. Like I said, you want to move him up from 19 or 18 in this case, what we had him to 15? Yeah, sure, go ahead. But does that change anything, really? It's still in the same tier. It's still a personal choice thing, what you need, what you're expecting. I imagine in fantasy drafts, however, because he's a name, he might go up more. You know, and where it, let's say in draft before this happened, he was going to be a seventh-round pick. I could see him going in around four now. I could. Because we'll be looking at wings at that rate. And then, oh, Patre, there's a name. Oh, he's going to Vegas. Vegas played so well. So I think perception could change things more than really reality will here. That being said, if I was a Pacioretty owner in a Dynasty or a Keeper League, I'm happy about this. I am. Because, listen, you can always make a pro and con argument. I mean, the con would be, well, you know, he stays in Montreal. He would have played all the important minutes, everything. He was really their only threat there. True. But now he's playing with much better players, a much better team. So I think that would be good for him. And also may rejuvenate him. Assuming everything works out well there, you know, he's not going to be a gambleholic, and he measures him well with the teammates. Tatar didn't. You know, not that it was his fault, but he didn't. Assuming he doesn't have that problem, I think it's a bonus for his fantasy owners, absolutely.
Yeah, I really like actually everything you said here, you know, because I kind of agree with you. For me, exactly, and specifically even the players you cited, is exactly the only players that I would sort of put up over. So he jumps to the top of the tier that he's in, but he doesn't significantly change in my mind either, you know. And I love what you said. You know, just as a little bit of a tidbit warning for people to be aware of the fact that I think the perception might be better than the reality here in terms of fantasy drafting and fantasy value, at least coming into the season, because it is still a situation where you are going to a new team. You do have to, you know, learn a new system. I mean, Gallant was an assistant coach when Pacioretty was there, so they know each other, so that's certainly ease the transition. But obviously they're not changing that top line. So he's going on that second line with Stastny and either Hula or Tuch. They're still going to be that, you know, getting familiar with each other learning curve there. You know, so if that wasn't the case, okay, maybe I'd put him up another spot or two. But again, essentially it comes down to exactly what you said, George. And as far as the trade, yeah, I think it's pretty solid for both teams. I actually, you know, really love it for Vegas. Montreal, I don't know if I love it. I don't hate it. I wouldn't tear it down. I don't know if I'm in love with it, but again, when you look at it through the filter of everybody knew this was going to happen, so nobody's offering you top dollar, it really sort of makes you comfortable here. Tatar, he's really got to prove himself that he can bounce back. I mean, I like Tatar for most of the time that he was in Detroit, you know, but he really did fall off the last year and a half, enough that I'm, like, seriously concerned whether he can realistically bounce back. Suzuki has been considered a very good prospect, maybe even better than that. But from what I've been following and what I've read, the shine has sort of come off him. I think everybody still thinks he's going to be a good to very good player, but I think when he was drafted, a lot of people are saying, okay, he could be a borderline superstar. It does seem like the general consensus is moving a little bit away from that. And this is not really to cut him down, you know, or totally undermine the return that Montreal got. It's just sort of putting in what I see as a realistic perspective. And yeah, the second round pick is like sort of a solid return there. So sort of very interesting. And yes, that was sort of nice then to wait until after the football games yesterday to announce that. All right, George, let's turn our attention to the right wings. And as we usually do, I'll sort of read things off for our listeners before we delve into things. And I guess one of the things that struck me most here, George, before I even jump in, is that by far the right-wing rankings, you know, at least between me and you, NHL.com that we use, as well as some other rankings that I sort of took a gander at, surprising a level of consistency and consensus, I guess is the word I'm looking for, overall here. So it really seems that most people are in a similar mind frame to who are the good, at least for fantasy, who are the good, who are the best right wings, and so on down. But looking at things, George Kucherov, first across the board for me, UNHL.com. Line A, second our rankings, second for everybody. Same thing with Pasternak. And I believe Tarasenko as well. So they're 1, 2, 3, 4 in our rankings. Patrick Kane comes in at 5. Blake Wheeler comes in at 6. Joe Pavelski, one of the few players that has shown up in more than one position rankings, since I generally don't like to do that. But it's enough of a question that I think it's legitimate that he's both a right wing and a center in terms of falling into our rankings. So he comes in at 7. Phil Kessel comes in at 8. Mitch Mariner comes in at 9. Radulov of the Dallas Stars comes in at 10, rounding out that top 10. Then we got Voracek at 11, Ratanen at 12, William Nylander at 13. At 14 comes in Hornquist, and then we got Brock Boesner at 15, and number 16, Arvidsson. number 17, Wayne Simmonds. Marcus Granlund comes in at 18 for the Minnesota Wild. TJ Oshie, that's sort of interesting that he's this low, at 19 for the Washington Capitals. Riley Smith rounds out the top 20. At 21, we got Cam Atkinson of the Columbus Blue Jackets. Dustin Brown of the LA Kings comes in at 22. JT Miller at 23. Mark Stone, which is sort of interesting, considering he's that high on the Ottawa team, so that'll be an interesting question later on. He's at 24. Tom Wilson, another really interesting name to pop up, comes in at 25. Eberle at 26. James Neal at 27. Gordy at 28. And rounding out, at least as far as we've gone, was Reinhardt for the Buffalo Sabres at 29. After that, things started really getting pretty divergent, so that's kind of why I stopped there. But, you know, the bulk of that top 20, like I said, a whole lot of consensus, and even where we differed, it was really just one or two spots, which might as well be consensus when you're talking about fantasy rankings. So it only really our opinions only really start changing a lot once you get above 25 there. So, George, let's bring it right back up to the top of the ranking board. Kucherov, Laine, and Pasternak have that as tier one. But I guess my big question, is that really one tier or two tiers? You know, because I'm just wondering how strongly you feel whether Laine and Pasternak are legitimate first-round draft choices. Back in the first round, but are they guys who you'd be like, if you saw them pop up as an 8th, 9th, 10th pick, or are you totally fine with that, and it's like some of the other players we've talked about that, hey, if he ends up being the 9th or 10th pick, I wouldn't do it, but I would have criticized somebody else for doing that. So how will we do these three guys, and are all three legitimate first round draft choices in your opinion?
No, we've discussed this on other shows. The only real wing here I would have as a possible first rounder, and by possible I mean he's a possible first overall pick, is Kucherov. I mean, once again, we're talking about 10 team leagues here. You're in a 14, 16, 18 team league, obviously that changes things. There's nothing wrong with Patrick Laine or David Pasternak, and I came really close to putting Pasternak over Laine. Really close. But in the end, I decided to stick with what my original thoughts were, but they're not first round picks. They're not. And it's, you know, sometimes we're not really criticizing the player. It's more like there's just better players at other positions. We know center's loaded. You know, there's 5-6 there. If you give one goalie, Vasilevskiy, into that first round, you get two left wings, one right wing, well, that's your 10. I mean, who are you taking Laine over? And he said, we have another consensus number two. Who are you taking over? Crosby? McDavid? I don't think so. You know, obviously we have them both ranked higher. McKinnon? Seguin, Malkin, Stamkos. I mean, not all these centers we even put in the first round, but aren't they all similar? So that's your issue there. Austin Matthews or Jamie Benn. These guys can all make arguments, but they're all the same tier with these guys. Ovechkin, of course, is a first-round pick. Marchand, I think, is a first-round pick as well. Jamie Benn. There's a lot of players here, a lot of good players. I think when it comes to tiering these guys, I have Kucherov in a tier all by himself. Yeah, he's a possible first overall pick, and now Laine and Pasternak were taking second round. That's a different tier. You know, you're at least a round lower, you really can't be considered for a first round. So I'd say Kucherov's all by himself, and then, you know, I'll put my Laine and my Pasternak guys in the next tier. And once again, that's probably another small tier, just those two, because then I have another drop off after that. So, listen, they're all great players. I certainly wouldn't mind having, I'm not saying anything negative on my my deep keeper league, I have Patrick Laine. I'm very happy with them, not complaining, but they're not in the same category as Kucherov or the other players I mentioned. They're solid. They're really good. They're moving solid. They're really good second-round picks. That's what they are. There's no negative there.
Yeah, they, you know, and actually one of the biggest reasons why I want to ask you this specific question, because I completely agree, is the fact that just if me and you were to, you know, publish these rankings, these combined rankings that we've put together, just because of the absolute consensus here, and you're just looking at the ranking numbers and where we have them, it sort of gives a little bit of a false impression because we have them so clearly as 1, 2, and 3 that to me, if you were just looking at this in a vacuum, it would seem to imply we're thinking that these guys are clearly good enough to be first-round draft picks. Taking them, I'm thrilled to be taking them at the top of the second round, just as you said, George. But yeah, for all the guys you mentioned, and you mainly focused on the centers, you know, and not all those centers, as we said, you know, would even necessarily fit in our first round. But I'm taking them before I'm taking, you know, Laine and Pasternak. And Laine, you know, George, I think he's the next Ovechkin. You know, I really do. I'm not, you know, guaranteeing it, I'm not predicting it. Not that it would be a sort of crazy thing with how he's done, you know, here early in his career, you know, but you just look at how he plays and how he can score. It's possible. So especially if I'm in a keeper league, I'm not saying it pushes him into the first round, but he's a player I'm going to target and specifically want to get, but I can't pull the trigger there to make him a first-round draft pick. All right, George, the next tier that we have, and again, I agree. Kucherov's clearly in a tier by himself, so second tier would be Laine, Pasternak. So now we're talking about the third tier of Tarasenko, Patrick Kane, and Wheeler. I guess the clear and obvious question would be, okay, well, we know that Laine and Pasternak are clearly, you know, really great second-round picks. Even though we're in a next tier down, we're in tier 3, are we still looking at the second round in your mind, like that you need to expect to have to pay that for these guys? Or do you think we're sort of slipping even farther down, you know, when you're talking about Tarasenko, Kane, and Wheeler in particular? And are any of the warts on these guys really significant that it's a serious red flag, where even if they were in a good value position, you might consider avoiding them? And to be honest with you, I'm specifically thinking about Kane because a lot of us don't think Strong's going to be very good this year. In fact, they might be really, really bad. I can't go that far, personally, but I can understand the argument of somebody bringing it up. So, tier 3, George, what do you think of these three players and where you might realistically find them still available in your draft?
Yeah, Kane is the tricky one because, you know, just 2 years ago, he was a guy we were talking about number one overall, or certainly top five. You know, Wing was producing his kind of numbers, you know, in 15, 16, 46 goals, 60 assists, you know, it's over 100 points, 37 power play points. He was a monster, an absolute monster. Team 17. 89 points. You had to expect some regression. 34 goals, 55 assists. And granted, he dropped down to 7 power play goals and only 23 power play points. But still, you're taking those numbers. Last year, the numbers went down again. Respectable numbers, mind you. 27 and 49. 76 points. Only 5 power play goals. So it's 3 straight years his numbers have gone down and the power play goals have gone down. So there's some concern here. He's only 29. So it's not because he's getting, you know, he's not 35 and the age is catching up with him. He'll be 30 during the season, November. So what do we believe here? You know, will his numbers continue to go down? You mentioned the Blackhawks, bad team. I don't think there's really much talk about that. We know they're going to be a bad team. But does he rebound? You know, can he be – I mean, if he's the same player as last year, 76 points, and where we have him ranked is correct. But if he bounces back up to – I said I'm not going to say he's going to get over 100 points. That's crazy. But if he bounces back up to 16, 17, where it's 85, 90 – then we have him ranked too low. Then he is that borderline first-round pick again with the numbers he could produce here. So it's really what you believe here. You know, and obviously for almost any player, it's sort of 3 choices. The upside, the stay the same, or the floor. What do you think is going to happen here? I have some concerns here. I do. I think if the team is bad, there's not a lot of talent around him. They don't often play him with Jonathan Toews. Brandon Saad fell apart at the end of last year. Yeah, it may not be all – it may not matter about Kane. It may be more the people around him, how they play here. So I have concerns, which is why I ranked him where I ranked him. But that being said, I thought he was a tough rank. I didn't think this was easy because I don't think anybody truly knows what's going on. Is it all about the team? Is there something going on with Kane? We know his personal life has had some issues, but he seems to have gotten past that. So he's a tough rank there. He is. Tarasenko, another guy who, when healthy, really is a better player than probably we give him credit for, but he slowed down last year a bit. You know, actually, that entire line did. Jaden Schwartz and Braden Schenn. They were, house on fire the first couple of months of the season. One of the best lines in hockey. Schwartz stayed healthy. Tarasenko, we know, was very good. And Schenn proved that trade with Philadelphia was a ripoff. But then, last third of the season, not so much. Things didn't go so well there. 33 goals, 33 assists. And that's both light to Tarasenko. He's been a 40-goal scorer. Prior 3 years, he all had more than 33 goals. Last year, not so much. Only 6 power play goals again. Not that he's ever been a big power play guy. He hasn't. Just kind of strange for a goal scorer. He had 6 last year, 9 the year before, 12. He has nice years, but not big, big-time power play numbers here. So I think that's why he's not really considered in the tier above, because the numbers just aren't there. Especially the goals he'll take, you'd like to be 10, 15, 20% higher, but the assist numbers just aren't there to put it with these other guys. Wheeler's the exact opposite. All right, we know he plays for a very good offensive team with talent all over the place, but coming more of an assist man. And I think that's a concern of the fantasy owners. Mainly, it depends on what type of league you're in. I mean, you look at his numbers last 5 years, 28, 26, 26, 26, 23. That's the goals he scores. He's going to score around 25 goals. Not great. Power play numbers are even worse than that. He's never scored more than 8 in a season. Last year was 4 or 5 years ago. He's an assist man, so he's a points man. So really, this might come down to, for me, where I'm drafting Wheeler, depending on one category. Do you have a category of power play goals or power play points? If you separate that, if you have power play points, then he's valuable again because he gets so many power play assists. He had a crazy amount last year, 34. That's psychotic on the power play. That's just nuts. So if you have points, that's much more valuable than goals, which, generally lifts that category up a little bit there. But I'm wondering if he's becoming, like I said, more of an assist man. That's why I have him ranked lower. Great player. Love the team, but doesn't score enough goals for me.
Once again, as far as I'm concerned, you're so on point here. Patrick Kane, I think he is a very legitimate, second-round draft choice, especially if it's the middle or the back of the round. But just because of the concerns you express that I have too, I'd be perfectly happy to have him, but I'm going to see if I can get him at the top of the third round. I'm going to see if I can sort of get value here just because I'm worried about what Chicago's going to be. I think at the end of the day, he's going to be fine, and Chicago might not be great, but they're not going to be bottom five of the league bad, in any stretch. I think they're going to sort of be in the middle of the pack, but probably on the playoff bubble and maybe even outside the playoffs. So I think it's going to be just fine with him, but there's too much unanswered questions. I think, George, he's playing with Schmaltz on the second line. It's just about whether Schmaltz is going to be the center of the left wing. And I like Schmaltz's upside, and I think he's going to be a good pair with him, but it's still an unknown, and it's enough of an unknown that I'm not confident in it. Tarasenko, again, I loved your breakdown, but the one sort of caveat I'd like to throw in there, which, really solidifies him at the number four spot, in my mind, clearly above Kane and Wheeler, is the fact that you're all right about everything you said, but don't forget, he had a shoulder injury that last third of the season where his production really went down. And also, by that point in the season, he wasn't always playing with Schwartz and Schenn, partly because they had cooled off so significantly. And outside of those players, there was really nobody left who was producing offensively, even before they traded Stastny away. So I think that's going to – even if he's going to end up playing with Riley, and there is going to be sort of a chemistry learning curve there, the type of player that Riley is and the fact that Riley usually is pretty darn good on the power play, in which I imagine he's going to be playing with him again, really heartens me and gives me a sense of confidence that he's going to get up back up to that 38, 39, 30, 40 goal level. So he is far and away my favorite in this tier, even though I would not be upset about getting any of these guys. And I loved how you focused on the question of Wheeler and the power play points versus power play goals as a category in your league being a really big determining factor there. So I love all these players, but really on point in terms of what might be an issue or might be some points that you just want to pay attention to when you are considering drafting these guys. All right, George, tier four for us here. I'm going to give you a bunch of names, so it'll be interesting whether you think this is one tier or two tiers, or if it even really matters, once we're starting to get into the meat of the rankings here. But at number seven, Pavelski, 8, Kessel, Mariner at 9, Radulov at 10, Voracek at 11 is my next tier, at least what I have as tier four here, George. Obviously, I want your general breakdown of these guys in this tier, what you think of it. At this point, when you're getting to this tier, are you sort of waiting a little bit? Is there a significant drop-off here that, you're not jumping into these guys in round three and round four for sure? Or is it, again, jumping off right after the last tier ended kind of here? Is there anybody here you particularly love that you think might be able to outdo their ranking? And I understand we're still pretty high in our rankings. And is there anybody here that has a red flag that, okay, I see why he's ranked here, but personally, I'm not touching him with a 10-foot pole? George, what do you think about this tier?
Well, the first thing is I would have to put Rantanen in this tier. I would. I like Rantanen. I love the line he's playing on with Landeskog and McKinnon, so I would put him in this tier. And he's a guy – in some ways, I might like more than some of these other players. Let's start from the beginning. Pavelski, once again, he's on the center list as well, but he's going to be, if he's a wing available in your league, he's going to be drafted as a wing before a center because he's going to be at that third-round pick with upside. I do worry somewhat about what do they do. Right now, he's scheduled to play with Evander Kane on the top line. He'll center Kane. What if they move him back to wing, though? What if they get Joe Thornton-itis? And Joe Thornton's got to play top 6 minutes. They put Thornton, hopefully, on the second line. Well, they put Thornton and Pavelski together again because they've worked together for so many years and worked well. I think that's a huge mistake. Thornton is not that player anymore. Can't really skate the way he used to be. Knee injuries, major knee injuries to both knees now. I think that's a huge mistake, but it's still in the back of my mind sometimes, especially with a Hall of Fame player, teams, coaches, cater to them. So it'll be in the back of my mind that could be a problem. But if not, if he's playing on that top line, I think he's a high upside guy. I think he'll be a guy that makes some noise. But once again, there's a reason we have him ranked where we do because we don't know that for sure. They could make that mistake. Kessel. Now, it's all about the goals. It's not thrilling that they move him around. Sometimes he plays on a third line because he doesn't really necessarily work well with Crosby and or Malkin because they're all puck guys. They all need the puck. Without it, they're not as useful. So he becomes that power play guy to play with them. So eyesight can always be a problem. What if he's not shooting that well that year? 34 goals last year. The most he's had since 13-14. 58 assists. That's his most ever. I mean, once again, why? That's the first question I always ask you. Why did he have those numbers? This is a guy who's 30 years old. He'll be 31 before the season starts. So why all of a sudden a huge uptick in production? The goals, I don't think necessarily shocks me. We know he can shoot. If he's having one of those years, he's going to score some goals. The assists do shock me, though, but he had 47 the year before. Still, he's probably my biggest worry of these players, a guy who's so high, third, fourth round pick. So I do have some reservations about Kessel, only because I think he may be drafted because of last year, and that may not be the season he has this season. Marner, well, we all love Toronto. Once again, they're going to go 82-0. Never going to lose a game. Going to score about 8 goals a game. Everybody believes that. Tavares, Matthews, Marner, Nealand, they're all getting bumps because everyone thinks this team is the greatest team, since sliced bread pretty much, even though their defense is average at best and probably not even that. And Frederick Anson's far from a lockdown goaltender. But still, Marner gets the bump because of that. It's hard to do. And no matter who he's playing with, that's what's great about the Wings here. You're playing with Matthews? Great. Playing with Tavares? Great. Doesn't matter. What does matter is power play time. Who gets that number one power play time? And I think that's Marner's going to get that. Radulov, we've discussed him before. We've talked about Jimmy Benn and Tyler Seguin. My only worry here is what happens if Dallas says, hey, we need to go two productive lines. We need to move somebody off that top line. You know, that's my only issue here. You know, if it's going to be Radulov, if he goes to the second line, well, then he really just becomes a power play guy. He'll do damage when he's on the power play, but when not, he's going to have trouble, you know, even strength. So I do worry about that, but I don't have much issue with this ranking. I said Voracek and Rantanen is the way I would switch you. I'd have Rantanen above Voracek. Not that there's anything wrong with Voracek, but he's another guy I look at more as for assists than goals, and I think Rantanen's just ready to take off. He's a name that really, I don't want to say nobody knows, that's not fair, but certainly anybody who's just a blah hockey fan wouldn't know the name. Rantanen, oh, I think I've heard of him. Where does he play again? You know, that sort of thing. You know McKinnon, of course. You know Landeskog, because he's been around forever. But Rantanen is another up-and-coming young player that really you want. And if I was going to target somebody here, it would be Rantanen, because even you have Mateer below. You know, and I think there's upsides coming. I can get him later. I don't need to grab him in round 3, round 4. I might be able to get him round 5, round 6. To me, that's a nice bonus here. I'm high on Rantanen for this season.
You know, I actually, one thing I'd push back on you, I think Rantanen is even more anonymous than you're suggesting. You know, it seemed like you're hedging your bets a little bit in there. You know, I think he was Scheifele 2 years ago in terms of being anonymous, you know, even though he had the 84 points. And George, the only reason why he's in the tier below is actually not me or you, because you had him 11 overall. I had him 12 overall. He's like 16 or 17 in NHL.com's, and that's the only reason why he pushes down that far. If NHL.com has him where we have him, he's right there tied or is indeed jumps Voracek. So, you know, I like that a lot, and I certainly would put him, if I was asking you the question of who is the most likely to, you know, to exceed their expectations in terms of where we have ranked and where he might be ranked in, say, March, Rantanen would definitely be the guy for me, too. The only, I think Mariner might give him a little bit of run for his money, because, you know, think about Mariner, who you covered so well already, you know, I guess the only thing I would add to that is that the points of production that he had, and he was being bounced around the lineup a bit as well. He found himself playing in the fourth line at times, and you know, he found himself, you know, playing with Bozak and James Van Riemsdyk a lot. Not that that's bad at all, but that, don't forget, that was the third line, and clearly the third line. Now, as the season progressed, especially later in the season, he got much more regular time in the top six, and that's encouraging. But I think what I'm driving at here is I think the expectation is that he will be playing with Tavares. If he's not playing with Tavares, you're exactly right. He's going to be with, you know, Austin Matthews. So he's going to have more consistent line mates, you know, and the production that he gave, having been bounced around a little bit still, 22 goals, 47 points, 69 points overall, 27 power play points. And that's with, like I said, being bounced around a little inconsistent time that he was getting, that should even out. So that sort of really makes me, him, as well as Rantanen, like two of my absolute favorites in this tier that I would lean to, that I would skewer to, partly because of the sort of minor red flags you were talking about with other players like Pavelski and Kessel here, and to a lesser extent, Radulov. And I completely agree with you about Voracek. I mean, I think he completely legitimately deserves to be this high in the rankings, but he is more of an assist guy. And since we do know fantasy leagues do tend to skewer towards favoring goals and goal scoring, whether it's even strength or more even specifically, you know, power play goals, because power play goals is much more popular as a category than power play points, even though in my personal opinion, I think power play points is a much fairer, you know, category to have, you know, because you know, then you're just sort of skewering towards the goal scorers, in particular in your fantasy league. Pavelski, I'm glad what you talked about, what how you did about him. Because I was actually, you know, I started kicking myself a little bit when I handed it off to you, because I was like, oh, I actually specifically want to ask you about Pavelski, because there is that sort of balance of, you know, is he going to bounce back? Because two-thirds of last year, the first two-thirds, he was almost downright awful, at least in terms of the production that he was putting up. You know, we also know that he was injured. So there's the, you know, I think it's not unrealistic to believe, okay, if, as long as he's healthy, just that alone should sort of increase his, you know, point potential, you know, back to what we more expect. But there's still that open question of, is he going to stay as center with Kane? And you mentioned this already, and Datsoy on the right side, or is it Joe Thornton-itis that he goes back up there? And that's where I think they're leaning. And I said the other day when we're talking about centers, I think the smart thing to do, and I hope what I see from San Jose is Podelsky as your number one, Kachuri as your number two, and Joe Thornton with one of the young guys, like a LeBlanc, like a Meyer, one of those guys on the third line. I think you have crazy balance if you do that, if you are the San Jose Sharks. But as of right now, and hopefully we'll know by your fantasy draft and our fantasy draft at the end of the month, have a clear idea of this, but if we're talking right now, it makes me a little bit nervous in terms of what you're possibly going to get there from Pavelski in particular. All right, George, let's move it on to our next tier. And you know what? I'm going to go right ahead and concede to you that Rantanen should be in the tier above. So we're not going to include him in the next tier. So our next tier would be Nylander, Hornquist, Boser, Vancouver Canucks, Arvidsson, and Wayne Simmonds. And, George, this tier is ripe with questions. And not huge red flags, but, yeah, some red flags here, you know, and just to sort of list them off, like, you know, okay, Nylander, I'm just sort of wondering why he's so far below Mariner, because he's obviously in the same situation, and you can make an argument that, you know, he's gotten more consistent time as a top six forward in the time that they've both been there. So I'm just sort of wondering about that. You know, Hornquist, you know, you mentioned about how Kessel gets bounced around. What about Hornquist? Now, granted, when he's getting bounced around is usually Malkin or Crosby, so it's not like a horrible fall-off. But this is a guy who's missed 12 games each of the last two seasons, played 82 games the year before that, but had missed 18 games 4 years ago. He plays a hard physical style. So the kind of game that lends itself more likely to be injured. He is good. He gives solid production. But George is getting up there in age a little bit. Not old, but, like, you know, he's around that 30-year-old mark as well, you know. So I'm just sort of wondering if some of these things that I'm throwing out there make you as nervous as they make me and a little trepidatious. Because every year, for me, personally, I get a little nervous about drafting him, so I let him slide and somebody else gets him. And then halfway through the year, I go to myself, yeah, I probably should have taken him. You know, so Boser obviously had a great year playing two-thirds of a season, 29 goals, 25 assists, but he's playing for what's going to be a terrible team in Vancouver. Everybody knows he's the guy. You know, is that right for big sophomore jinx regression, or you're going to be playing all the time, you're getting all the number one minutes on the power play, so he's not only going to get his 29 goals, he's going to push 40 this year. I mean, is it an either-or thing for you or somewhere in between? And then Arvidsson, sort of like a little bit like Forsberg on his team, good production last couple of years, but it always seems like he should be doing just a little bit more. And then Simmonds, of course, there was the injury from last year, drop in production. And now that James Van Riemsdyk's there, does he get squeezed out of the top six again? You know, so I mean, I'd be pretty happy to have a lot of these guys, George, but I think we're getting to the point in the rankings where you're starting to have some really serious questions about, you know, should they be here? Should I take them? Or should I skewer to a different direction and focus on another position before I get back to these guys? So, George, do you agree with me that this tier is rife with big questions that are hard to answer, or do you see a little bit more clarity than I do? George?
All right, for a rare change, I'm going to play the optimistic viewpoint here, or at least something that I'll try and steer away from you, just to be a little different. If you don't take one of these guys, Nylander, Hornquist, Boser, Arvidsson, Simmonds, if you don't, you stay away. Boy, there's a pretty good drop-off after this. I mean, a pretty good drop-off. You know, that'd be the one place I'd go with here. You know, once again, I'm just really playing devil's advocate here. After this, you look at these five guys, this is a clear tier. And after that, you know, this is one of the things where on my sheet, I'll have a mark letting me know, wow, the drop of it is significant here. If I need my second right wing, or God forbid, I didn't draft any yet, I better get one of these guys. Yeah, because I'll be in trouble after this. There'll be more hitting and hope. If you think there's question marks here, the next grouping or the rest of the last grouping has a hell of a lot. So that's my one issue here. Now, you're right about Nylander. And I completely agree with you. Why do we have him so far? I mean, once again, I shouldn't say so far. Why do we have Marner ahead of him? Why? You know, okay, Marner may be a better player. I might give that. But right now, it looks like Marner's going to play with Auston Matthews and Marleau.
where Nylander's going to play with Tavares. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but once again, you know, there's, I kind of like that top line better. You know, Nylander, Matthews, Marlowe, Marner, Tavares, Hyman. But then again, you could look at it like this. Well, if opposing teams like it better, that mean, might mean, you know, the number one defensive unit is up against that top line. We're not Tavares, Marner, and Hyman, not so much. So bottom line is this. You can look at it both ways. They're both about even for me. I did also rank Marner higher. But to me, it's really just take one and go. I'll take either one, not going to complain. Not really in the least. I like both players. Now, it's after this, after Nylander, where the question marks really, you know, you already mentioned about Hornquist. The only negative about Hornquist is he plays that, you already said, I don't want to go into detail. He plays a more physical game. He's a guy who's going to be in front of the net. He's going to get beat up. Not that he's going to get injured, but odds are he'll get injured more than most people. You know, and once again, availability is the most important ability. That's my only negative about Hornquist. Boser has the problem of being on a terrible team, you know, and that sort of thing. And he's the only – well, I shouldn't say the only, but he's one of the few offensive options there. He's going to see defensive coverage there. That's why he ranks lower. Arvidsson, I agree with you. I do expect more. And I wonder – he's another guy I'll target in drafts. But he's another guy I wonder, does he have a next level? Another step to take. And that's why I'll target him, because I think he does. Or I think he may be. But I also think, you know, even if he does it, all right, it's a solid pick. He's not going to hurt me. But I do think there's another level for him to achieve. And so, yes, I'm higher on Arvidsson for the team he's on, who he's playing with. I think there's more there to be gotten out of. Now, Simmons, you're exactly right. You have two problems here. One being the injury. Another guy plays a physical style, so he could get banged up. But two, maybe even more importantly, boy, you know, where's he going to play? You know, there's a lot of top six forwards on this team. You know, Voracek, Couturier, Giroux. You know, they had a JVR, Nolan Patrick. Is Simmons number six? You know, is it Raphael? Is it Konechny? You know, what are they going to do here? You know, so, yes, I'm concerned about this as well. Actually, out of all the players in this group, I'm probably concerned about him the most. And it's a shame because I like him. Maybe I like him more as an NHL player. If I was running an NHL team, I'd want his kind of style player, tough guy, has talent, not just, you know, he could do more than just fight, no more to be a physical presence. He can also play the game. He's the kind of player I love as an NHL player. But, you know, as far as Philadelphia is concerned, the playing time issue is going to be a problem. You know, and I know in the one league you and I play in together, I won't have to worry about him because we have a Philadelphia Flyers fan. He'll believe he'll take him. And he'll probably take him earlier than he should, and I don't mind that. You know, I don't mind. Listen, you have to know your owners. You have to know your owners in your league. He's a Flyers fan. He has Simmons almost every year, and I expect he'll do it again. And he'll. But the most important thing is he'll take him around earlier than he probably should, so it's not a problem I'll have to deal with. You know, I think this will be a mistake this year because of these question marks that you and I have brought up. So I'm probably staying away from him right now. And once again, we're talking at September 10th. You know, by the time that draft that I'm talking about does happen, September 28th, well, maybe we get more clarity. Nope, he's going to be the second-line wing. You know, that's where he's going to be. You know, they solidified that. Okay, then maybe I'll be a little bit more interested. But for the most part, he's also a player I'm not afraid to talk up during a draft, even though I have no intention of taking him, just to let that Philadelphia Flyer fan know that he's on my mind. You know, that to make sure he takes him earlier than he should. Listen, all's fair during a draft.
I love the point that you make, you know, and sometimes we sort of, you know, forget to mention this as much as it's sort of it's important. It is, you know, we always talk about know your league, you know, what's your categories. You know, it obviously it's a major impactful thing in terms of how you're going to draft, you know, and one of the reasons why we always talk about how it's so hard to quantify certain things, especially when people ask us, you know, for fantasy advice, should I take this player over this player? What do you think about this trade? Well, have you told me all your categories so I can properly analyze that for you? It's just as important to know the people in your league because, again, you know, unless you're just sort of in a random one-off league that you're joining, most of us in regular leagues, most of the league, if not the whole league, is back year after year. So you know the tendencies and the preferences of these guys. You know, I mean, hey, when I first joined the league, there was a diehard Ranger fan. And, I mean, like, he always, a roster of 20, he always had six Rangers. Always. It didn't matter whether they were even good or bad. So whenever I saw that number drop below six, if I had a Ranger on my team, I would offer him a Ranger. And I'm a Ranger fan, but you know what? I'm trying to win a championship. I'm not trying to root for the Rangers in my fantasy league. So that is so very very, very important here. You know, and I love the point that you sort of did the devil's advocate thing, George, you know, because I sometimes do set things up purposely a little bit more negative than I personally feel, or a little more positive than it personally feels, just to sort of get a sort of point across in my questions. So the last question I have here about this draft, and again, when we're starting to get this deep in the rankings and when you're starting to get past the first, say, three or four rounds, it's almost near impossible to say where a player should be taken in what round and where, and even in those top two rounds, top two or three rounds sometimes as well. But, George, as you just mentioned, there is a notable drop-off after here. In fact, some people who are listening maybe should take a Dramamine after this, because it's that much of a drop. And I like a bunch of players a lot after this, but still. So you're having this big drop. You're at the latter part of the top 20, so the latter part of your number two right wings that you're going to be drafting. So my ultimate question here, George, is how long can you wait? I mean, like, if you're in the sixth round, can you expect one or two guys in here? If you're in the seventh round, can you expect these guys here? Or if you want to get one of these guys and avoid this big drop-off, what's the most you think you can realistically wait to guarantee yourself one of these number two right wings? George?
Well, always an impossible question to answer. But let's say this. Let's say I do have one right wing already. I drafted Blake Wheeler. Whatever. It doesn't matter. Whatever right wing you want to give me. I'm not desperate. Now, if you're desperate, this is completely different. You better grab one. But I'm not desperate. All right. So it's round six. Let's say three of them are gone. So just for giggles, we'll say the last three are available. Bose, Arvis, and Simmons is available. I'm at the top of round six, you know, and the centers are, there's no one standing out at any position. But at the other positions, it's deeper. And I said I'm at the top of round six, which means I'll be at the bottom of round seven. So it's going to take a while for me to go. You know, nobody truly stands out here. The right wings aren't better than the left wings or the centers or anything else. All the positions are about even here. Well, then I'm most definitely taking a right wing. And the reason is simple. I wouldn't expect any of them, to be available when I go again at the end of round seven. And I've already said, there is a significant drop. You know, where maybe the left wings, there are a few more left. You know, centers, I know there'll be a few more centers left that I like. You know, defensemen, maybe it's a time for to take a top D1, but generally I don't do that. I already have my starting goaltender, and goaltending is fairly deep. So that's the way I look at things. And this is one of those situations where even, I mentioned the three right wings, you know, whatever thing you want to give me. Even if maybe there's some left wings that are available that are slightly better than these right wings. I have them ranked slightly higher overall. I still might go with the right wing because, well, you know what, there are six of those left wings left, but only three right wings. You know, I know these right wings aren't going to be here when I go again. You know, I go again in 16 picks. Not going to happen. You know, where those left wings, well, you know what? If I think the three right wings are going to go, now there's 13 picks. There'll be some other positions that will go. There's a much better as far as playing the percentage game. Odds are I'll still be able to get one of those left wings with my next pick if that's where I want to go. So that's how I approach drafts. Almost always in all leagues, baseball, hockey, football, I'm playing the numbers game. You know, I know a tier drops off here, so I know I really want one of these guys. Yes, I have two left wings and a center ranked higher overall. But you know what? Even if I can't get those guys go before I go again. I don't mind the other guys in that tier, where this, I really dislike this next grouping of guys we're going to talk about. Just have way too many question marks for me. Picking the right one of this group that's going to have the breakout year or be a better player than I expect is going to be very difficult. I'm taking my left wing here. That's how I would approach this. It'd be a little different talking about the end of round six. And then the top of round seven, I go again. Then I can do the exact opposite. You know what? Also, one of these three will last. I'm going to take the better player, which is the left wing, or the better center, or the better goaltender, whatever it might be. I'm going to take the better player in that case. You know, but like I said, this only works if when you're ranking these players or what you believe, you have a player slightly better. I am not taking a right wing that I have significantly worse than the left wing that's available. I'm not going to shoot myself in the foot. I'm talking only slightly better. You know, obviously, if it's even, you go in the right wing anyway. But if it's a slightly better player, then I'm willing to take that because of position. I need the position to fill. You know, I need to be strong there to be strong overall team. So I think there's a hard distinction for fantasy owners to remember there. Sometimes they think, oh, it's any player. No, just slightly better. If you have somebody in left wing who's significantly better, then you take the left wing, and you'll deal with your right wing later. Maybe you do get lucky in one slides of those three you have ranked. But if not, I still want the better player.
I really like the context that you put it in, especially since, again, there's a precipitous drop-off here where there is a drop-off around the same area of the rankings in left wings, but it's not nearly as stark. And when I look at that, I still say, I'm fairly confident in that potential. So, if you're in a situation that's relatively in context that you put it, I think it's an absolute certainty that you got to take that right wing. Assuming you're fairly close, and then players that you, as you already said, that you have above them are only slightly above them and not significantly above them. So, George, let's jump into this big mire of a pool, because I do think that there's a few players here that really could have great years and a few players here that could really be embarrassingly bad. Well, okay, that's an exaggeration, but let's get to it. We're around 18th here, starting with Granlund. Then we got Oshie, Riley Smith, Atkinson, Dustin Brown, and what the hell, I'll put J.G. Miller in there in that tier as well. So, George, some of these guys have had really, really good years, so there is potential here. But, again, I have to start with Oshie in particular because, I had him here too. When I ended up doing my rankings, this is where he ended for me as well. I had him at 19. We have him at 19 overall in our draft. But, George, even if you're worried about the KO for the Capitals, this is a guy who scored, 59 goals the first two seasons when he was in Washington. He's playing with I think we all figure he's playing with Backstrom again on the second line, but that's not terrible. And if he's not playing with Backstrom on the second line, he's playing with Kunetsov and some guy named Ovechkin on the first line, even though I think most of us believe that Tom Wilson will be that right wing there. But still, the point is that he's still playing with high-quality players. Okay, and he's still a guy who has put up some pretty darn good numbers. I understand he was, he had a little bit of an injury issue last year, and he stepped back. But still, with Oshie, I'm wondering if you're thinking the first two years in Washington were the outlier because last year's numbers, at least in terms of goal scoring, more closely aligns what he did with the rest of his career before he got to Washington. So is this a readjustment to? This is the expectation, and those 2 years were the outlier, or was last year just sort of a hiccup there? Granlund, I almost feel like he gets overlooked because he put up like a nice 60-plus points in the last 2 years. But I don't know. There's just something about that Minnesota team that makes me nervous. Atkinson looked like he's becoming a 30-goal scorer a couple of years ago, really fell off last year. Riley Smith, I had some reservations about. Lens in Vegas, wow, man. Oh, my God, I think he might have changed me to a true believer. Dustin Brown, we talked about endlessly last year. Was it 5, 6, 7 years since he put up these kinds of numbers? Is it realistic? Even playing with Kopitar and Kovalchuk, which we expect. Is it realistic to expect him to have another year like he had last year? Which, by the way, he started off really hot and ended really cold, And JT Miller, I think he is one of my favorite guys in this tier in terms of upward potential. It was great when he got to Tampa Bay, but I'm nervous that that left wing spot on the top line with Kucherov and Stamkos isn't a sure thing. And if he's not there, are you afraid his production will disappear completely? So I know I asked a lot of individual questions here, George, but what do you think about these concerns? Obviously, there are legitimate concerns, but, is there one or two guys here that you're willing to take a chance on and being like, all right, I think that guy's going to be good, particularly good, but even if he's not, I'm uncomfortable that I'm going to get at least solid number three right wing production since we're right here on the border of back end of number two right wings and top end of number three right wings. So, George, how do you view this tier?
I might actually include a couple of other guys in this tier. I would have gone probably with Stone, Wilson, Eveley, and James Neal as well, and Yanni Gourde. I think they are all intriguing names here, but that's the problem. They're intriguing. Which guy do you want here? I agree with you about Minnesota and Granlund. I can't do it. I just can't do it. I don't trust it. I just don't trust it, and that's why, once again, the drop-off falls here. Oshie, what do you believe? I mean, really, what do you believe? You got the we say it over and over again. You got the cup hangover, first of all. Not that he's necessarily a huge part of that, a big worry, but you got the cup hangover. Probably not playing with Ovechkin. Probably on the second line. But as you said, well, that's with Backstrom. That's not exactly terrible. You know, but it's not playing with Kuznetsov and Ovechkin. It's not. So there's a drop-off there. So, but there's somewhat of a worry. Like I said, last year, even though they won the cup, wasn't his best year by far. You know, I think we also downgrade him a little bit because you wonder if he's becoming that player he was in St. Louis again. It never quite reached up to expectations. I mean, even his 2 good years in Washington, it's only 56 points, 51 points. He's not an assist guy. You need him to score goals. He's not scoring 30-plus goals. He's really not all that valuable. When you look at his overall numbers, he's not. So that's a problem there. I just don't see the upside here. That's why he's ranked where he is. Riley Smith with Vegas. Boy, I mean, last year was magical all around, right? I mean, magical all around for Vegas. Can they do it again? You know, what kind of team are they going to be this year? Are they going to have that chip on their shoulder again, or is they go back to being a normal squad here? You look at their overall roster, good team. But they shouldn't be great. They shouldn't be. You know, still that top line, William Carlson, they're all, you know, projects here. Can William Carlson do it again? Marchesio, I think, can. Bradley Smith. Probably all, each one, in my mind, is suited more to second-line work. You know, but that being said, I don't necessarily hate it here. But even Riley Smith, never scored more than 25 goals in a season. You know, never scored double-digit power play. Hell, he's never scored more than 7 power play goals. So where's the upside here? Yeah, really, where's the upside? Why are we so thinking this is going to be a banner year for Riley Smith? You know, so that's my problem with him. Atkinson, all right, he got hurt last year. Okay, if there was one guy that maybe, Scott, maybe, if he's available, I might take a couple of slots higher than what I think he might be worth. It could be Cam Atkinson because I'm wondering if he's going to slide a little bit because of the injury and because the numbers weren't there last year. So I'm wondering if he can pick up from where he was 2 years ago. Once again, then 16, 35 goals, 10 power play goals. Last year, 24-3. This year, he still has scratch, has a new contract, is healthy. Maybe everything clicks in. But he's pretty much a he's a goal scorer. He's not giving you any, you know, his highest assist is 27. So he's not going to give you assists. He's a guy, he's a shooter. He scores great. He doesn't give you much. So there's always going to be that worry with him. Brown. Yeah, we all know about the Brown. He disappeared for a couple of years, was on a milk carton, came back last year. And he was found. Yeah, you know, and he had a fantastic year. He has to play his style of game, which means could lead to some disciplinary problems at times with the NHL. But when he's on his game, he's a problem for opposing teams because he can play. Going to play him on top line, likely with Kovalchuk and Kopitar. You would think that would work out well. You know, you would think. But in the back of my mind, it's still like, wow, what do I believe here? That he was last year just he's back to being the player he was, or what? He's magic last year. And now he goes back to being the player he was a few years before that. Not so sure I trust him. Miller, you put it perfectly. A lot of talent there in Tampa. A lot of talent. And I could see a lot of line changing going on, trying to figure out what works and what doesn't work there. So that's my biggest worry. This is a team that actually might have, you know, 9 forwards here. They can all play. They can all make an argument to be on that top line or even top 6. You know, and there's going to be a couple of guys left without a chair when the music stops. And I am worried. Right now, it's not supposed to be Miller. But, you know, you look at what the projections right now. Miller's there with Stamkos and Kucherov. You can guarantee me this all season long. Well, Miller jumps up a hell of a lot. 6, 7, 8 slots where you want him. And there'll be guys who are going to draft for this, no doubt. Second line right now is Palat, Braden Point, and Tyler Johnson. There's going to be some changes here. All right, I don't think Palat is should be on the second line. Tyler Johnson, I'm not so sure about either. Tyler Johnson can also play center. That can move Braden Point around. You know, I mentioned Yanni Gourde. The only reason he's as low in my rankings is because right now he's third line. But what if they move him up? I think him and Palat at the very least should be changed. They can make an argument that he should be on the top line. So that's what I mean here. I think there's a lot of changes going on here. Outside of the fact you know Stamkos and Kucherov are going to play, a lot of these other guys can be moved around all over the place. It's like shuffling a deck of cards here. And it might all work. It might not work. You know, until they figure it out. Which combinations work best, which, you know, I don't know when they'll do that. So that's my issue there, Scott. Same, what you brought up, same thing. I'm just not so sure Miller's going to be on that top line all season long.
Yeah, you know, I love the way you sort of broke this down here. I mean, and I believe, unless I misheard you because I was looking something up, Atkinson I'm most high on by far here, you know, because I do think he's going to stick with Dubois and Panarin on, you know, that top line. And Panarin's starting to become that guy, that player that I'm sort of starting to refer to as, okay, if I was playing on this line, I could get 10 or 20 goals, you know, and I can't skate to save my life, you know. And I do think the injury had, a significant effect on him in terms of letting him, getting him really going at the top of his game last year, you know. So I think, you know, 35 goals that he scored 2 years ago really might be scratching the ceiling of what he's worth. You know, so I'm not expecting him to initially get 35, but I think 30 is realistic for him. I'm looking for 28 for 30, and exactly what you said about JT Miller. If I had a whiff that he's going to be regularly on that top line, he jumps at least 5, maybe 8. Well, okay, that's probably exaggerating. He jumps to the very top of the tier, maybe the back end of the tier above, you know, with Simmons. Kind of thing. That's how confident that I think he can be 25-plus goals and maybe 65-plus points if he's going to be on that line the majority of the year, which sort of brings me to the next tier, George, you know, because I actually agree with you with a couple of names you throw out here that I would have, you know, in this tier that we just finished talking about, certainly Mark Stone, which is interesting because I want to hear what you think about him in particular, because we expect, you know, Mark Stone to be on a team that's a tire fire. You know, he's going to be in that top line. He's going to be getting all the minutes. So, yes, there's sort of compensation there, but, it's, you know, how much is this going to negatively impact him at all? Gord, I love Gord, George, but Gord, I see in the same situation as Wayne Simmons. Because I agree with you what, in terms of what the lines are expected to be, especially that second line. And I personally might replace Gord, you know, on the second line, you know, take away either Johnson or Palat, and put Gord there instead. But I'm not confident Tampa Bay is going to do that. So that's the only reason why he's down on this bottom tier for me. But Tom Wilson, I'm really intrigued to hear what you think about. Because he was not a guy that I had in my top 30. He came in 26 for NHL.com and 25 for you. George, he had a nice year last year, you know, putting up some intriguing numbers considering what he's done before. You know, it's not world leader, but 14 goals and 21 assists is nice. We know he's going to be, or at least we expect him to be, on that top line with Kunetsov and Ovechkin. But I'm not sure if I see why somebody would take him, unless they're looking for penalty minutes. Unless penalty minutes is you know, a big category, because he's had, the least he has had is 133 penalty minutes. He usually gets more than 150. So if you're telling me if I have penalty minutes in my league and you're telling me I'm getting 15-plus goals and more than 150 points, plus with the hits, if that's a category in my league as well, okay, then I'm starting to see it. But based on just the offensive numbers, George, and if you don't have these secondary categories like hits and penalty minutes, I'm not sure if I get what NHL.com and you're seeing here. So those are the three names of this tier that particularly stick out to me that I really want to hear feedback from you. But, you know, this last tier, Mark Stone, Tom Wilson, Eberle, James Neal, Gord, and Reinhardt. What do you think about this tier and specifically those three questions that I asked you?
All right, well, let's tackle Tom Wilson. First of all, he is a category guy. And in most leagues, at least most leagues I play on, hits are a category. Penalty minutes seems to be going away, thank God. But still, a lot of your home leagues do count those as well. And listen, I fully understand why penalty minutes was incorporated at one time into fantasy. I get it, because, hey, we need to get a bigger pool of players. You know, you want these guys that are maybe back in the day, too, you wanted your goons in there, your fighters, and it was fun. Nowadays, I think it should go away. Penalties, for the most part, are a negative. Not always. There are good penalties in the game, but for the most part, they're a negative, and I don't think they should be rewarded in fantasy at all. This is why we have hits. You know, it's pretty much the same players doing that, and it rewards what they can do. So, yes, you're looking for that for Tom Wilson. I think you're also looking at the fact that now we've discovered I don't like the man. I think he's I might call Marchand a scumbag. I don't know if I'd call Wilson a scumbag, but he's a dirty player. There's something player that plays on the edge of legality. And you've heard, oh, he's gone to talk to the Department of Player Safety to find out what he's doing is wrong. Yeah, you really need to know? You know, really? You don't know what you're doing wrong? So he's certainly not a player I'd root for unless he's on my fantasy team. Now he's going to play with Ovechkin. So once again, he's going to get that, you know, anybody who plays with Ovechkin, we've seen this over the years, or Crosby, these no-name guys, they get a bump up because you expect, well, like as you said, oh, I can score 10 goals playing with these guys. Well, so can Tom Wilson. In this case, maybe it's 2025. Plus, we have the other categories going to hit in. That's where the rub is. I think it's exactly what people are looking for here. But if you're in a league, like the league we're in together, well, he doesn't get rewarded for anything. He's not a pick. Yeah, we don't have hits. We don't have penalty minutes. There's nothing, no category for him to hit. It's a points league. He just won't matter. You know, in that case, he goes away in that kind of league. So he is league-specific, category-specific, depending on what categories you have. But there is upside there, depending if you're in one of those leagues. But like I said, absolutely category-specific with Tom Wilson. As for Stone, you mentioned they're a dumpster fire, train wreck, tire fire, I think was the term you used, and no argument there. He will get all the minutes, power play minutes as well. Once again, he's probably ranked so low because of the – I mean, has there been anything positive said about Ottawa this offseason? You know, he's also ranked low because sooner or later, Erik Karlsson, we think, is going away. So that's going to be a problem as well. Not going to be a lot of talent there. No matter how, it doesn't matter how good you are, how good you might be, and all the minutes you're playing, and there's no one around you to play with. So I think Ottawa's going to have a lot of issues there. That's why he's ranked as low as he is. Jordan Eberle, it just depends on what you believe about Barzal. You know, really, for the Islanders, that's all it matters. He's going to play with Barzal, but he's going to face number one defensive coverage now. There's no other line for the defense to worry about, so he's going to see a top unit on every team pretty much every time they step on the ice, and that's going to make life difficult. What could make things good for Eberle is no matter what defensive unit is going up against Barzal, going to have everyone's attention because of how well he skates. That will leave players like Eberle, you know, and whoever's on the left wing, if it's Bovier, or if it's, you know, Anders Lee, well, Anders Lee can't skate to save his life, but whoever it is, having less defensive attention. They can find the open spot there. That should help there. Eberle is also, by the way, in a contract year. And the Islanders aren't going to make the same mistake. Listen, Eberle's not the player Tavares is, so don't get me wrong, but they're not going to make the same mistake. At least I don't think they are. They are the Islanders. Maybe they will. But they're probably not going to make the same mistake with Eberle they made with Tavares. If they can't sign him, and if you don't sign him before the season, I don't know how you're going to sign him in season, but if they can't sign him in season now, I expect they'll trade Eberle before the deadline, so he can end up on a new team. Maybe it's earlier than the deadline. I also expect the Islanders to be a bad team. Therefore, they'll have no reason not to trade him in December, November, January, whenever it might be. He could find himself on a new team, which, as we know, could be good or bad, depending on where he ends up. Neil already moved to a new team. Not a player I was big on last year. He's that home run hitter. And what I mean by that is, when he's hot, he's hot. Puck's going in the net. When he's not, he's not. So he's sort of that guy you sort of, you know, you want to put him in your lineup when he's hot. You know, get him in there. If you get those 6-7 goals, he's going to have in 4 or 5 games. But when he's not, you got to get him out and go with somebody else. And that's so hard to figure out when those times are. When is he playing well? When is he not playing well? You need to really watch the games to discover. And we already talked about Gordon, and I agree. And there's nothing really more to be said here. It's all about where he plays. You know, right now it's on the third line. That's why he's ranked where he is. If you're going to move him up a bit, you know, if he's going to play on that first line or second line, then he moves up in these rankings. He goes from, well, right now he's 28, probably somewhere around wing two. So he's talking about that 20 range, 22, somewhere around there. But right now on third line, it's hard to move you up without knowing that. And keep in mind, you know, we keep saying this, if they move him up. Well, you know, even if they tell us September 22nd, whatever it might be, the week before the season's over, oh yeah, we're going to have Yanni Gourde on the top line. That doesn't mean it's staying that way all season. So that's always another worry here. You don't want to overrank these guys just because you hear they're moving up, especially when you look at the roster and you see, my God, if he gets off to a slow start the season, you know, Cooper can easily move him back down and move Plott up, move Miller up. Hell, move Tyler Johnson to left wing. You know, they can easily switch things around here. Tampa Bay just has too many good players.
Yeah, nice breakdown of this year here, you know, right at the end. You know, if again, you know, as George, you said at the top of number shows, you know, we are making these rankings with the idea of a relatively standard league, even though, say, on a regular basis, there is no real standard for NHL. But what we expect would be a standard league in terms of teams, 10 teams, and categories. Okay, so we're at this point in the draft. You're looking at your reserve guys, you know, because most of those standard leagues two centers, two right wings, two left wings, or two centers and four wings as your general starting lineup. So you're looking at bench players now, okay? And if you're putting in that context, I'm willing and pretty comfortable with taking a risk on really any of these guys. And a couple of these guys, I think, you know, do have a lot of upside. You know, obviously, as we both said, Otto is expected to be a tire fire this year. But last year, were they really a whole lot better than that? Not all that much. And Mark Stone played just shy of three quarters of the year, 20 goals, 42 assists. That's he's on a pace for more than 82 points, being just above an 80. It's about an 84, 85 point pace if he played the whole season on a team that was pretty bad. Now, yes, I do think Ottawa's going to be worse this year, but is it going to be falling off a cliff worse? I don't know about that. Yes, there's a few less good players to play with. Obviously, Hoffman's away, you know, is gone, and Broussard is gone, and I know those aren't necessarily world beaters, but they were fairly quality top six forwards, at least have been in their career. So, yes, I see where that's different. But I'm just saying here, as my third right wing, I am so all over this in terms of taking a risk here and having be my third right wing, my bench player, who if he plays as well as I'm suggesting he might push out my number two. If I'm in a deeper league, maybe I'm a little bit more trepidatious of him being, a regular starting lineup guy there. So I certainly understand that sort of perspective, and I definitely get the perspective that you're coming from with Tom Wilson and putting in that context certainly makes a lot more sense to me. And yeah, I love what you said about Eberle, particularly about the whole contract year thing. I've said it a couple times in these ranking shows already this year. I'm for the most part, and it is a case by case basis. Generally speaking, you're in a contract here and you're top six forward, that's a check mark in my mind because you're playing for your money, you know, especially if you're a guy who's 26, 28, 30 years old, right, in your prime, at the end of your prime, looking for that big mess of contracts or that last big contract that you're going to have. I'm all over that guy proving himself and having, you know, a career year, even though in terms of a personal character level, it sort of makes me think a little bit less of you, but it's a common thing, so I get it, you know. So I think it's a legitimate thing to sort of put in factoring, you know, when you're sort of splitting hairs, in particular when you're drafting these players. All right, George, last question before we wrap up. When you look at your own rankings, any players that didn't make our rankings that you are particularly intrigued by? Now, I'm saying, now again, anybody we're talking about after this, we are looking at bench players and we're looking at high-risk or high-reward players. So I'm not expecting you to say, hey, I've got this guy ranked 39th that's going to score 35 goals and 85 points. You know, I'm not saying anything like that. But, you know, is there a name or two out there after this, below this ranking level that we've reached, that you're particularly interested in targeting late in a draft as a risk kind of pick? George?
Well, there are always players, you know, that fall through the cracks that you keep an eye on, you know, depending on how far down, how much you want to go to. Now, I don't think there's anybody that stands out here. I mean, I do have some guys that weren't ranked 25 that got in the top 25. So they're like Gord, we just mentioned. He is actually 27th on my list. He could have been a guy I'm looking for if he didn't make yours. Stone, I have 29th. Neil, I have 30th. Those are all guys I would have had here. But you and NHL.com had a ranked higher. I don't get. Boy, I mean, I have Perry ranked 33. I just don't know if I'm going down that rabbit hole. You know, I just don't. I mean, listen, if he's a reserve on my bench, sure. I have no problem with Perry, but I don't want him even starting in a flex for me. I'm just not going to trust the man. Been burned before. Palmieri, another guy I'm kind of interested in. He's going to play with Taylor Hall, top line. Look at the guys who are really reserves or flex players at best, so I don't mind taking a shot here to see what happens. Toffoli is someone I've kind of liked with the Kings. Going to play on that second line with Jeff Carter. I don't mind here. Tolvanen, young player, you know, you can get late. I'm not trusting Natushkin, a guy who, once again, back when he's first came up, another guy I went to the wall with and didn't work out for me, so I don't know if I'm going that way with Dallas. But there are always a couple of guys that will be intriguing to me, but only, like I said, only if they end up being my reserve players. Now, I'm not talking about the first couple of guys I mentioned. Gord, Neil, Stone, I probably can roll with them in my flex. You know, I don't want them starting, assuming we're going to start two wings. I don't want them starting for me, but I have no problem in my flex. If I get them as a reserve, that's all the better. But the other players I mentioned, you know, the Palmieri's, Toffoli's, if I can get them as a bench player for me, you know, a little watch and see, I'm good with that.
Yeah, I really like that Palmieri pick because in the context, as you put it, he's down there for me too. Teravainen, you know, who I believe was about 23rd on your list, just didn't quite make my – and just in terms of trustworthiness, you know, I sort of like what I expect to be the guarantee of a James Neal, for example, or Mark Stone over I think what is going to be – even though I think he's probably got a good shot to match the points that he had last year – I'm just a little not sure. I mean, I do think that Carolina team is sort of headed in the right direction. And in terms of looking at the long road, I sort of like what they're setting up with some of those players. But Teravainen in particular, like I said, I don't quite trust there. But outside of Palmieri and Teravainen, Zucker, I'm pretty intrigued by. I know I've said, even though I think that the Minnesota team has got issues, Boudreaux teams almost always score well. He's going to be in that top six, but likely on that top line with Eric Staal last year, 33 goals, 31 assists. I could see him having a little bit of regression, but I don't see him dropping below 25. I do expect 28 to 31 goals, maybe even matching with the 33 or slightly more than that, this year. So I think he's a real nice sort of risk to take in that context of sort of a reserve type of role. All right, George, thanks as always, especially these last 2 weeks where we are going pretty long in time that we don't usually do. So I will let you go as I wrap things up and just remind our listeners of some of our recent schedule that we have that we do have. As I said, we started goalies and their top 25 on the 3rd of this month. Then we had centers on the 6th, top 25 left wings on the 7th. Today, of course, is top 25 plus right wings, and we're wrapping up all the positions on Friday with defensemen. We're also going to have sleepers show, as well as some draft strategies and mailbag questions coming up in the next couple shows as well. But if you're trying to warm yourself up and get yourself re-familiarized, whether you are an NHL fan or a fantasy owner, George and I did a team-by-team off-season look and a bit of a season preview all through the month of August, starting on July 30th. And covering all the teams, and we broke down their off season. We took a look at their upcoming season, and also talked about fantasy value. So we talked about a lot more players in each team than we have had a chance to do for each individual team in all these position breakdowns. So you definitely want to check those out as well. And then, as I said at the top of the show, once the regular season starts, we will restart every show our fantasy reports that include the IR report, goalie report, waiver wire recommendations, and line updates, as well as lots more information. So we're your one-stop shopping for all your hockey needs, whether it's fantasy or on the ice. Have a good hockey week, everybody. We'll talk to you on Friday.